What's up, heroes? Welcome to episode 12. I hope you guys are making the most of the near national quarantine and you're all healthy and you're happily making music and engaging with fans online. Keep up that social distancing as best you can, and we're going to make it through this together. This is part two of my interview with Wade Sutton, who runs the wildly popular 6-Minute Music Business podcast. He offers incredibly practical advice for musicians in a short but entertaining format. So, if you missed episode 11, please go back and listen to part one, because Wade offered some great advice about branding, YouTube, and when to talk politics as a musician. In the second half of this interview, Wade talks about the two things every bio should do for you, tips on marketing, and shares the one thing that every artist should do at every stage of their career.
A lot of the artists who you see out there having success, who are monetizing their music, who are out there performing on a regular basis, and people are showing up for their shows, they'll tell these people this, and they don't want to hear it.
Roll the intro music.
This is the Producer Life Podcast with your host, The House Ninja. Bringing you actionable ideas to improve your music and get it heard.
As far as the personal information goes, you know, there's a fine line that we walk where we want to show some of the stuff that is going on in our personal lives, some of the things that are impacting us on a very, very personal nature. But you have to watch, because sometimes some people can kind of cross the line and get to a point where the word doesn't sound good, but it almost comes across like they're whining, or maybe they're looking for sympathy. Don't do anything that's going to make it look like you're playing the sympathy card. People are following you because they see strength in you. They see a sense of leadership. I mean, a music artist, a DJ, whatever the case may be, when they get up on a stage, we're looking to them to lead a room. So that's why I say there is that leadership component. But that doesn't mean you can't show, you know, there's times where maybe you get kicked in the mouth and something doesn't go your way, and there's that moment of vulnerability that you're willing to show. Just don't use it as a crutch. I'm a big believer in showing people your human side. I have always said, when I write bios for artists, that my main goal is to establish a balance between legitimizing the artist and humanizing the artist. So when I'm trying to legitimize, I mean, I'm talking about places that they've performed and things that they've done and people that they've opened for, and if they've charted on Billboard and things like that. But when you're trying to humanize them, you know, you're talking about things that are important to them, or maybe struggles that they have had to overcome during their life. A great example that I can give you is, there is a young lady right now, a songwriter and an incredible guitarist in Nashville, and her name is Ava Page. And Ava is 13 or 14 years old, I think. And she was really getting a lot of attention in Nashville with her songwriting skills, her picking skills. I mean, she was performing like crazy everywhere in Nashville. And all of a sudden, one day, we found out she was diagnosed with cancer. And she has allowed this battle with cancer that she has having, she has taken that to social media to show people, this is what it's like dealing with cancer, particularly as a teenager. And she has done it from a position of strength. You know, she's not on there looking for a sympathy vote. There are very well-known singer-songwriters in Nashville who stop by in the hospital to see her when she's undergoing different treatments. And they'll go in with their guitar, and they'll sit down and they'll sing with her. And you can see she's weak. You know, she's having trouble getting through it. But these people coming in there and doing that's very uplifting for her. And we're watching that battle with cancer play out on social media. So, you know, she's not doing that to take advantage of the opportunity to build up her music. she's just showing this is what's going on in my life. And people are responding to that. And they're following her and they're wanting to know how she's doing. And I know all the cards that she gets and the messages, that really does a lot to lift her spirits, which she needs. I've talked about things on my show about stuff involving, I mean, one of the big things that I talked about that people really responded to was a story that I told one day about, I had a hearing that I was involved in front of domestic relations, because again, I'm a full-time single dad and there were some issues with my ex not wanting to pay child support. And we had to have this hearing at domestic relations. And in the middle of that hearing, her attorney made a comment along the lines of, we wouldn't even be in this hearing having this discussion about the child support if he had a real job and was making more money.
Ouch.
I've heard music artists say all the time, you know, people say, you know, get a real job. That was the first time in my life anybody had ever said that to me. And of all the places to have that said, you know, in the middle of this hearing that's really stressful, there's all this tension, emotions are running high, and then this guy goes and says that. And I came home that day, and I sat down at my keyboard, and I wrote an article about it. It was called Musicians Get a Real Job. And it was the first article I ever wrote for CD Baby. And I sent that to Chris, and I remember Chris emailed me back and he was like, hey, this is really personal. Are you sure you want me to put this out? And I said, absolutely, because I said, it's a story people need to hear. I said, musicians are going to connect with it because musicians have been in these kinds of situations. And we need to have this discussion, but when somebody's writing an article about it or somebody's talking about it, they need to be willing to open up and be vulnerable themselves and show, I understand what it is that you're going through because I've gone through it and here's what happened to me. And Chris published that article to the CD Baby DIY blog, I think in September of that year. I think that was 2015. And the following December, CD Baby put out a list of the top 10 articles on their website for that year. That article was number one. And wow. I tell people it was number one for a reason, because I was willing to open up. And I wish more music artists would say, I need to share more of my personal life. I need to show more things that aren't necessarily music related. And it can be as simple as, you know, you go see a new movie. I mean, what just came out? Birds of Prey, the Harley Quinn movie. You know, mm-hmm. It could be something as simple as going to that opening weekend. And as you're walking out, open up your phone and shoot a 45-second video saying, I just walked out of this movie. Here's what I thought about it. If you went and saw it, you know, let me know in the comments what you thought about it. And now you're creating content that's not necessarily music related, but it's content that you can use to further engage with people and kind of show other parts of your personality and other things that you're doing. Fans are drawn to people who come across as being dynamic. You know, social media has really changed the way we look at a lot of this stuff. Now, you know, outside of the musicians that we see the label signing that maybe we have grown up with, that people that we perceive as being legacy artists, well, we're going to follow them no matter what, because we love them. But newer artists who are trying to get a foothold in the music business and they're trying to create their own fandom, so to speak, now, because of social media being the way that it is, it's really important for you to give more of yourself to people. And that means going beyond just the music.
Yeah. So that brings up sort of an interesting conversation about, you know, the focus of a musician at different stages in their career. And my listeners kind of fit into three categories. I've got the bedroom producers who are just getting started. They're building their skills. They're starting to think about branding. They're trying to build an online presence. Then you've kind of got the residency stage where maybe they're playing out on a weekly basis. They're releasing music regularly, but, you know, they're still trying to ramp up to full time. And then ultimately, I think where a lot of us are shooting for are those regionally known full-time touring artists that are playing at festivals and clubs. Can you give some advice for each of those phases of a career? Like for the bedroom producer, what are the most important things that they need to focus on? And then sort of at the residency part-time stage, what should they be focusing on?
I think all three of those levels that you just said, there is a common thing that all of them should be focusing on at all times. And I know people do not want to hear this, because this gets brought up by music marketing people all the time. A lot of the artists who you see out there having success, who are monetizing their music, who are out there performing on a regular basis, and people are showing up for their shows, they'll tell these people this, and they don't want to hear it. You have to build up an email list. You absolutely, positively, 100%, no exceptions, have to put in the work to doing that. And that can look different for each of those people that you talked about. I mean, you know, you're talking about maybe somebody who's a producer who's wanting to start working with other artists. You know, there's a way you can go about doing that. As a producer, there's something that you have to get out to artists that says, you know, here's what you, as an example, maybe you put together some kind of a PDF, and that PDF is a bunch of bullet points of, if you're a musician and you're thinking about going and finding a producer, here's what you should be looking for in a producer, and make that really good quality information and just give that PDF away to as many people as you possibly can, but do it in exchange for an email. And start to build up that list. Now, as a producer, the other thing that you've got to do then is you've got to follow that up, because you don't want those people who sign up for that email to get that PDF to forget about you. So there is some kind of content that you are going to have to start putting out on a regular basis so that you stay relevant in their minds. The hardest thing right now, no matter what it is that you're doing in business, whether you're talking about somebody that has a pizza restaurant or a producer or a songwriter or somebody like me that's providing these services directly to artists, it doesn't matter. The hardest thing to do right now is to stay relevant in people's minds and to stay in front of them so that they don't forget about you. There's so much advertising that takes place. There's so much stuff on YouTube. We've become so attention deficit that we watch something and then we forget about it 20 minutes later. So the email list is your way of making sure that doesn't happen in a couple of ways. One, if you understand how something like the Facebook pixel works, just to kind of put it out there in a way that a lot of people will understand it, because I'm sure they've experienced it this way. If you go on Amazon and you're thinking about buying something, but you don't actually buy it, and you close out Amazon, and the next day you open up Facebook, and all of a sudden that thing you were looking at is showing up in your Facebook feed. And it's like, what, you know, this is like some national security bullshit that's going on. Who's watching me? That is happening because of the Facebook pixel. Facebook creates this thing. It's a pixel ID number, and you embed it in a website. And whenever somebody who has a Facebook account goes to that website, Facebook tracks that. Well, then what those websites can do is they can turn around and they can boost posts on Facebook and target people who went to that website. So if, again, we'll use a producer as an example. Let's say you create that PDF and you start telling people, hey, you're a musician. I've got 10 things you should be looking for in a producer every time you're getting ready to go into the studio. Go over to this website and let me know how to give it to you. They go over there. You have the pixel installed on that page. They sign up. Now you've done a couple of things. One, you've added them to the email list, but you've also captured that Facebook information for them. So as a producer, let's say you've got some sessions open that you want to put on sale at a reduced price. You can go onto Facebook and you can create a sponsored ad on Facebook, and you can promote that and only run those ads in the Facebook feeds of the people who cared enough to go get the PDF to begin with. So it gives you a way to always stay in front of those people. Content right now, it is the most important thing. You've got to keep getting stuff out in front of people. That's one of the reasons why my show went to 5 days a week. That's one of the reasons why you see these successful YouTube channels, whether it's somebody pulling pranks on somebody or somebody who's doing reviews of some kind of product. One of the other things that's super popular right now are unboxing videos. So you see them in music, you know, some new microphone comes out and you'll see people do unboxing videos. They'll order the microphone, they'll shoot a video, opening up the box. Hey, look, here's how it's packaged. Here's all the stuff that comes with it. You know, here's what you can expect. People love that crap, but it's that to have that ability to create content on a daily basis. I read something the other day because I know we had talked very briefly about the fact that I put a greater emphasis on YouTube. I just out of curiosity did a search a couple of days ago just to see how long does it typically take to get to 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. The things that I ended up seeing when I looked for it were all saying, if you put out content on a daily basis, it takes most people 22 months to hit 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. So think about that. Creating content on a daily basis on YouTube, and it still is going to take most people 22 months to get to 1,000 subscribers. How many people are willing to put in that kind of work?
Yeah. It's I think not, you're over 1,000. It's taken you about 6 months, right?
Well, I already had a couple hundred when I started to put the emphasis on. I think I had maybe about 300. And yeah, I did just recently hit 1,000, which, you know, for me, that was important because once you hit 1,000 subscribers on YouTube, there are a couple of things that happen that are really important. One is the community tab finally opens up for you, which is some people have probably seen over the last couple of months. If you go on YouTube, channels that you are following are going to be posting things like polls and images. And, you know, they might even just put posts on there that are in text just saying, hey, you know, we're working on this video that's going to drop in a couple of days. And it probably wondered how that's happening. Well, that's happening because those channels hit 1,000 subscribers and they suddenly had access to that community tab, which is what allows them to do those things. The other important milestone about 1,000 subscribers is it's one of the two milestones you have to hit to be able to monetize your YouTube channel. So for YouTube to start dropping ads into your videos and then giving you a cut of that money, you have to have 1,000 subscribers. And the other part of that is when you go to apply to monetize the channel, because there is an application process, when you do apply, in the 12 months leading up to that application, your content has to have been viewed for at least 4,000 hours. That is also a very difficult number to hit. And the reason why YouTube did that was because they wanted to make sure that, you know, just because somebody hit 1,000 subscribers, they didn't want them automatically being able to have access to those monetized ads, because just because you have 1,000 subscribers doesn't necessarily mean people are watching your stuff. You know, right. This you see a lot of music artists that pull this, well, I'll give you a follow for a follow. And that's what a lot of people were doing. Well, guess what? When YouTube made that change to how you get monetized, it completely nullified that follow for a follow strategy. Because yeah, now you might have 1,000 people, but you know, five of them are actually watching your stuff.
You're not getting any engagement either.
Right. You're not getting any engagement. You're not getting any views. So that's why YouTube made that change when they did. But again, you know, creating content, building the email list, no matter where you are in your career, whether you're the producer working in the bedroom, whether you're the touring artist that's going out and playing regional, whether you're somebody that's just going out to different venues in your county and you're doing open mic nights, or maybe you're doing like a 30-minute set at the local coffee house. That email list, I'm telling you, I know people want to make excuses. They want to come up and say, well, people don't use email the way they used to, so I really shouldn't have to do that. Wrong. They are still using it. And I remember, was it last summer? I think it was. Last summer, there was like a 24 or a 48-hour period where Facebook was having all sorts of problems. You would try to log on, you couldn't get on. It was all screwed up and it lasted for about 2 days. I know a guy who, when that happened, was just getting ready to release a new EP. And he had a really cool marketing strategy put in place for the 48 hours leading up to the EP dropping, stuff that he was going to do marketing on Facebook. And he put all this time and effort into coming up with this really cool idea. He had, you know, the money budgeted for the Facebook ads to do it. And that happened right when he was getting ready to drop that EP. And it destroyed what he was trying to do on Facebook to market that new release. And that's why I tell people, you never know when you're going to hit one of these hiccups. You never know, like, if you have a show planned and you've sold tickets, and now all of a sudden there's a major blizzard that's coming through the area, and you're having to reschedule the show, you got to have a way to get a hold of people. There are so many reasons to build that email list, but a lot of people don't want to do it because it is so much work. It's a slog. I get it, but it's important.
Yeah. Social media platforms come and go, but that email list you own and can continue to engage your fans.
You own it. And, you know, even if you're using MailerLite or MailChimp or AWeber, no matter what one it is, you do own that contact information. So if you're with MailChimp for 2 years, and for whatever reason you decide to go over to MailerLite, you download the CVS file for all that contact information, and you take it with you to the new platform. It's not like that on social media. If you're on Facebook and you build up a following there, and it sounds funny saying this, that you don't think it would happen, but nobody thought it would happen to MySpace. You know, you hit a point where, for whatever reason, your fans are really migrating over to a different social media platform, and maybe they're not on Facebook very much anymore. Well, now you're going over to that new platform and you're starting over from scratch.
Yeah.
And that's not the case with emails. You keep that. And even if you don't want to do emails, you know, text message marketing is now a big thing. If you're not going to capture the emails, capture their phone numbers. Just remember, with text message marketing, you might not want to send stuff out as consistently and as on a regular basis as you do email, because when you send that text message, it is a big interruption to what they're doing during their daily lives. Not so much with emails. So I tell people, if you're going to be doing text message marketing, save that for the important stuff. But the stuff that you send out like every week, every 2 weeks, that's what the email's for.
Yeah. So speaking of building email lists, you've got your free 24-page preview over at giftfromwade.com of your book, Hacking Music.
Yes.
And I know you're using that to build your email list. Talk to me about Hacking Music and sort of how that came about and who should pick up a copy of that book.
Hacking Music was a book. It was my second book. I co-wrote that with John Pashotta from Jetpack Artist Ventures in Nashville, which is a company that basically works to accelerate the careers of musicians through things like platform building, but also assisting in the musicians finding angel investors. John was the co-writer on that book. And then we wrote that with Jeff McMahon, who for about 20 years was the keyboard player for Tim McGraw. It's funny because I do tell some people who listen to my podcast that go, oh, I'm going to buy your book. I tell them, I said, just so you know, that book is much, much different. There's a massive truck going by me. I tell them that book is much, much different than what you get in the podcast. It reads a lot like a textbook that you would get in college. It's very high level thinking about the music business. We talk about being different from everybody else that's out there, the idea of creative differentiation. One of the ways we present that in the book is this idea of red oceans versus blue oceans, and figuring out as an artist, where do you lie right now and where do you want to be? I would say 99% of the artists are in the red ocean, which is where you don't want to be. You want to be in the blue ocean. We talk about that. It's very high level marketing stuff. We do talk about some things related to songwriting, not a lot. I know John kind of took the lead in that because that's not necessarily my area of expertise, but you know, there's also stuff in there like breakdowns of 10 very popular publishing deals. There's a breakdown of, I believe, 10 different record label models and how those work. So it's, I wouldn't say it's for somebody who's necessarily super brand new to the music business. It's more appropriate for somebody who has been in the business for a couple of years, and they're really trying to wrap their head around the way the business works and the way branding works.
Yeah. I like the fact that it's full of, you guys really like your quad charts. It's full of quad charts. It's got a lot of spaces for artists to go through, fill in the blank, almost like a workbook where you can think about your branding, think about how you're presenting yourself, think about, am I doing the most important things at any particular given time? It is overwhelmingly business oriented, but that's something that a lot of artists are missing.
It is. You know, we really tried to stay away from, here's what you need to think about doing creatively, and just kind of flip things and get into the other side of the brain for a little bit. But at the same time, presenting it in a way that, you know, we tell people the artists who are going to have success over the next 10 or 15 years, they're going to be the musicians who, one, embrace technology because tech's not going anywhere, but also, you know, that whole left brain, right brain thing, you're going to have to use both of them. And if you can't, this whole concept of building a team around yourself so that the other people on the team are able to do that for you.
Yeah. One of the things you talk about in the book is about the importance of turning your shows into an experience, that we're now in the experience economy. And
yes,
for DJs, that's challenging because you're kind of limited in this DJ booth and what you can do at any given time. You've got your turntables, maybe you've got your laptop, you've got your classic, throw your hands in the air, put your fucking hands up. But how, aside from the lights and the lasers and the display, do you have any ideas about how a DJ could better engage their audience and turn it into more of an experience and less of just a, hey, I'm going to go watch this guy perform?
The big thing, I think, is create a persona around yourself. Make it so that there's something about you that is different, something that's identifiable. Marshmallow is one of the people I think of immediately. You know, you have somebody who sticks this thing on their head and all of a sudden they're up there and, you know, they're DJing and they're putting on this show and it kind of creates a buzz. I know it sounds gimmicky, but the gimmick works.
Yeah.
You know, and we have seen a lot of times in history where there were things that people wore on stage that really became an identifiable part of their brand. I mean, we think about the diamond encrusted glove that Michael Jackson would wear. That's a big part of how we identify Michael Jackson, him wearing that glove. Roy Orbison, we think about him wearing those sunglasses all the time. Something like that, you know, that people see that it starts to burn into their mind. Oh, okay. So this person's got this persona. On the creative side too, I mean, find something that you do with your music that nobody else is doing. And this is a struggle with songwriters and it's a struggle with performing artists. A lot of them want people to appreciate them just for the music that they're playing. But we got to beat into their heads that it's way more than that. I would even tell people who are DJs that, and I know what you said, you know, you're kind of stuck behind that booth, but if you can find a way to bring a visual performance element to what it is that you are doing so that you are more entertaining to watch, that opens up a lot of really interesting things for you because now you're talking about being able to capture some of the stuff that you're doing on video and sharing that for people on social media. And now they have a reason to watch you. And then that starts to reinforce that brand. So then they find out, maybe you're in a city that you're typically not in, but people are like, wait a minute, I've seen that guy on Facebook. I've seen videos of him doing different things, and that gets them more excited about coming out. Then it becomes, and again, this is what I tell musicians, it becomes just as much about you, the individual, as it does the music.
Yeah, I had that experience. There's a producer, Salvatore Ganacci. I probably mangled his name, but his routine is almost like a clown show combined with a DJ. He has this over the top Italian producer persona, but he doesn't take himself or DJing really seriously. And there are videos all over YouTube that have gone viral with him jumping up on the stage and twerking along with the videos, or taking a nap during a DJ set, or interacting with just stuff nobody else is doing. And he was performing at EDC Orlando this past year. And I was like, I got to go see this guy live. I want to see what he's doing. I would have trouble naming a specific song he's done, but I definitely remember his performance.
I would love to see that. I'm going to have to go check that out and see what I can find of him on YouTube. Again, and it kind of goes back to something that I said about when I had the rebranding for my show. It was a willingness to embrace the craziness. And that takes a special kind of personality because it's risky. You know, it's one of those things where you do it, you run the risk of people looking at it and going, that's fucking stupid. Why is he doing that? But when you embrace it and it becomes part of who you are and you don't care that it's ridiculous. And I think even more so, you don't care about people not liking it. You know, you're not worried about the haters. You're not worried about the critics, and you're doing it for the people who do like it and appreciate it. You do it for them. And that's just awesome. Clowns. I'm just thinking of the people that show up for something like that, that have a clown phobia, and what's got to be going through their minds when they see something like that.
Yeah. Or you've got examples of groups like the Insane Clown Posse that build a whole cult following around that.
I see. And ICP, it's amazing when you think about it, because it wasn't just that they developed a brand and a persona on stage, but like you said, there's this whole subculture, you know, with the gigolos it's crazy. And there are other bands that I think of, They Must Be Mummies, you know, that's one. Bands like Ghost, and in the visual, you know, the visuals that you see on stage, whether you're talking about makeup or wardrobe, or you're talking about effects and things. Pink Floyd's another one. I mean, Pink Floyd's show, the music is obviously fantastic, but there's a really amazing experience that comes with seeing Pink Floyd live in concert when they were performing. Or, you know, fast forward to now, you have bands out there like Brit Floyd, Australian Pink Floyd, where they travel the world on tour doing Pink Floyd's music, but they do it replicating the entire Pink Floyd stage experience. It's amazing to see.
Okay. Well, thank you, Wade. I really appreciate your time today. Tell my audience about where they can best connect with you.
Well, they can jump over to YouTube and they can find the 6 Minute Music Business podcast there. If they want to get a free preview of Hacking Music, there's a 24-page preview that I give away at giftfromwade.com. And if they want to check out anything as far as the services that are offered to artists, they can do that at rockettothestars.com.
All right, terrific. I'll have links to all of those, as well as some of the things we discussed today, in the show notes over at producerlifepodcast.com. And again, I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
We covered a lot of territory today with Wade, so here are my takeaways. First, bios need to strike a balance between legitimizing you and humanizing you. Second, no matter what phase of your music career you're at, you need to work on building your email list. To do this, come up with a digital giveaway and make sure you're also using that Facebook pixel. I'm going to do an episode on that at some point in the future. Finally, you've got to create an experience for your fans. Think about building a persona on stage and think about the entire experience. Make sure you check out the show notes at producerlifepodcast.com, episode 12. And don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. This is the House Ninja, reminding you to be someone's hero today.